think I'm in Iowa anymore. It's the 2019 College Roadshow, and we are coming to you live from Lubbock, Texas, and Texas Tech University. Guns up from Texas Tech.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Dr. Phil Johnson. Then it's a road trip roundtable discussion with panelists Tim Lust, Steve Barrett, and Dr. Darren Hudson. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, the host of AgriTalk, Tex Flory.
Oh, Davis, thank you so much. Appreciate
you betcha.
That.
Yeah.
What a great day. What a great day.
It sounds like it.
It is. It is so much fun to get out here on the road, have conversations with people that are making differences mm-hmm. in young people's lives.
Yes.
And they are making the kind of differences that are going to turn into careers for these young people. Mm-hmm. The whole purpose of the road show, and I don't care if we're in Texas Tech, in Ames, at Purdue, mm-hmm. wherever we're at when we're doing these, is to help everyone identify the schools that are doing the best job mm-hmm. of identifying the needs of the ag industry, putting some action behind those needs, and transferring knowledge to the young people that are going to make a difference in agriculture going forward. It's fantastic.
Well, we've been fortunate enough to have some really heavy hitters on the show this morning and now this afternoon, too. I tell you what, I've announced so many doctors, I feel like it's about time I turn my head and cough right now.
I don't think they're that kind of doctor.
Not that kind of doctor?
No.
That's
you can
good.
Offer it up.
Well, you know, it is Friday.
Just stop it. Let's just stop that. Just stop the conversation. No, really good conversations this morning, this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Johnson, Dr. Hudson, and then mm-hmm. Tim Lust and Steve Barrett. The conversation that we've got ready to go for you. We've already had the conversation with them. Very good. I think the conversation that we have, it's going to leave you thinking, okay, you know what? It's not the best of times, but at least we know where we need to be.
Right.
And we've got an idea on what it will take to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good.
I think that's important in this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. What else is in the news, bud?
Well, I tell you what, wheat futures were under pressure in today's session as Statistics Canada reported July 31 Canadian wheat stocks at 6.2 million metric tons chip. That was roughly 1 million tons above expectations. Weekly export sales came in below expectations at 312,000 metric tons. Get this, that's down 53% from the previous week and 43% below the prior four-week average. Lingering dryness in Australia has failed to support futures as world wheat supplies are believed to be ample through the 2019-20 marketing year. December hard red futures were a half cent lower, 393 and a quarter. December soft red futures fell 2.5 to 463 and three quarters. December spring wheat, 6¾ cents lower at 495 and a quarter. And just about the time it seems like the idea is going to fall out of our heads, we're reminded of these burdensome, or I guess I use the word ample, world wheat stocks, Chip.
Global. Yeah, yesterday we had the question, you know, what are we going to learn about the wheat market that could be more bearish mm-hmm. than what we've already talked about? Well, let the Canadian crop get bigger. Well, after you get a roll going and you feel like you've got some momentum going on export sales, mm-hmm. let those fall apart on you.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's just a tough son of a gun. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you end up with the kind of market that we did today.
Yep, you bet. Well, corn futures failed to hang on to overnight gains, as has been the case in recent weeks. Funds continue to pile onto the short side of the market as December futures fell to a fresh contract low, encouraging technical selling. Weekly export sales were a disappointment, with USDA reporting net reductions of 166,000 metric tons for 2018-19 and meager net sales of 417,000 metric tons for 2019-20. That, along with a non-threatening weather forecast added pressure to corn futures today. December corn futures 3.25 cents lower at 355.5. March corn slipped 3 cents to 368.75. May corn closed at 377.5. That's down 3.25 cents today. Chip, on yesterday's show, we talked, we had Sean Haney behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk, and he had Rich Nelson. We asked him, geez, what gets back into corn? There are so many things lined up against this market right now. At what point do we get it turned around and head back to the upside?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what did he say?
And I still don't feel like we got a good answer. Well, you know, China would help. An export sale would help. You know, there are certain things that would help, but geez, this is death by a thousand paper cuts in the wheat and now in the corn.
Right, and export sales of 417,000 metric tons in the week.
It's not
enough. That doesn't cut it.
No.
Yeah, that doesn't cut it. And then you look at the weather forecast. You know, tomorrow in the Midwest, another good day is expected. But after that, you know, Mother Nature kind of ruins this party again. Mm-hmm. We've got some cooler temperatures. We've got cloudy skies. But The last 30 days in many locations, and I'm probably going to catch hell for this, but the last 30 days in many locations has been better for the corn crop than it has been negative for the corn crop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think the market is trying to factor that in.
Okay. Well, there, I like that. Yeah, good stuff, brother. Okay. Well, as with corn futures, soybean futures were unable to follow through on overnight gains. The non-threatening weather forecast has made sellers out of soybean traders who mildly extended their overall short position this week. Export sales in the report week did come in better than expected, with 70,000 metric tons of 2018-19 beans sold and 788,000 metric tons of 2019-20 beans sold. Exports were also solid at 1.197 million metric tons. Get this, Chip. China accounted for 780,000 of those tons. November bean futures were 3.75 cents lower, 857.75. Jan beans off 3.5, 872. March beans closed at 886, even down 2.75 on the day. Chip.
Yeah. Okay, now that we've got those sales in the books, we're going to be relying on the guys, Ken Smithmeyer in particular, over at Clipper Data, to let us know when those boats up at the PNW are being loaded. That's gonna have an impact on just what it means for basis. It'll have some impacts on the cash market for soybeans as they put that 700,000 in bean sales to China once they put that all together. So we'll be looking at that Clipper data to try to figure that out. But this talk of the non-threatening weather, Davis.
Yeah.
You know, I get it, but The more I think about the process, and I've been preaching about the process, if we stick to the process for the September 12 soybean crop estimate, I think we might be setting up. This market may have gotten too negative too fast on the idea that we'd have a good bean crop.
Let me shift into high gear for the livestock. October cattle off $3 daily limit, 94.87.5. Dees off 247.5, 99.75. October feeders 142.5 lower, 130.90. On the snout side, October hogs off 280, 63.50, and Dees hogs down the limit, 62.47.5. I tell you what, we got Dr. Phil Johnson from Texas Tech to talk Ag Economy Outlook live from Texas Tech in Lubbock, Texas. Stand
Guns
by
up
for more
AgriTalk.
It's the world's largest totally irrigated working farm show. Irrigation and so much more. Make your plans to be at Grand Island, Nebraska for the 42nd annual Husker Harvest Day, September 10th through the 12th. Get more information at huskerharvestdays.com. There'll be more than 600 exhibitors at the nation's most modern outdoor farm show site. Husker Harvest Day, September 10th through the 12th at Grand Island, Nebraska. See the show program online now at huskerharvestdays.com.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-806-9013.
That's right, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers and Annuity Rate Report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-806-9013. That's 800-806-9013.
Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
It's the world's largest totally irrigated working farm show. Irrigation and so much more. Make your plans to be in Grand Island, Nebraska for the 42nd annual Husker Harvest Day, September 10th through the 12th. Get more information at huskerharvestdays.com. There'll be more than 600 exhibitors at the nation's most modern outdoor farm show site. Husker Harvest Day, September 10th through the 12th at Grand Island, Nebraska.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to Texas Tech University and the 2019 College Roadshow. I'm Chip Flory, your host. Davis back in the studio. It's good to be with you again today, and thank you for joining us. Yeah, we've got such a unique opportunity when we're out doing these College Roadshows to talk to some... To talk to people that spend their lives thinking about what's happening in the ag industry. And one of those guys is Dr. Phil Johnson. He's the head of the Ag Economics Department down here. Is that right, Dr. Johnson?
Chairman.
Chairman of, the department. Good for you. Yeah. All right. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, as we were sitting and talking before we started doing this, The set of challenges that we face right now, it to me, because of the outside influence and everything, the challenge that the ag industry faces, it's kind of a unique period of time that we're in, isn't it?
Well, I think it's unique in the way that the tariff situation that we have right now, because we've spent so many years building our export markets. And they become so important to ag products. Mm-hmm. And then this, the tariff situation puts a lot of uncertainty within those markets. And so that's one of the factors. It's probably unique if you look back over the past 10, 15, 20 years, certainly. Yeah. We haven't had a time when tariffs were that important and had that big of an impact. Of course, we've had times when we had grain embargoes and other things that have impacted markets.
Disruptors.
Yeah. I mean, in ag, you can usually figure there's going to be something that will disrupt the market eventually. Yeah. The one thing that's about the tariff thing is we really don't know when it's going to work its way out.
Yeah.
And how it will work its way out.
You know, one thing that has kind of opened my eyes to the challenges that farmers are facing right now is... In the last 10 years, up until two years ago or so, we'd been building this demand base, building exports, building demand for corn through ethanol, through cattle, through hogs, through chickens. Everything had been pointed in the right direction on demand. And now, I should back up and say, and farmers were so focused on the supply side of things that demand was taking care of itself. It's not the case anymore. They've got to look and evaluate what that impact of demand and their supply side choices are going to be.
Well, it's true. They're going to have to. We'll have to adjust our supplies if demand is going to decline, and it takes time to do that. Right now, there's sometimes Mother Nature tends to come in and help out.
You bet.
Unfortunately, back in the 80s, early 80s, I remember there was a surplus of grains. We had the PIC program in conjunction with a drought in the Midwest.
1983.
And it didn't take long to solve the supply problem.
Yeah.
This year, we've had, of course, the rains and the floods in the Midwest. And that's probably going to actually help us adjust our supplies and those kinds of things. You hate that because it has a big impact on the producer.
Yeah.
The producer is going to pay the price one way or another. And so we've got to work out what we need to have is some visibility as to where we're going to be a year, 2 years from now.
Right.
And right now, we don't know that.
Exactly. It's the lack of clarity on where we're going that makes it so difficult to plan today to be successful tomorrow. You mentioned that supply side disruption that we had in 83. There's another one in 88. You know, there's several in the history. But those were natural disruptions.
Right.
There are those that want to go down the look at where we're at. We need to get back to supply side management. My opinion, as soon as you do that, you take away all your demand growth opportunities as soon as you start talking supply side management.
Well, I think that the producer is going to make, if you look at the economic incentives, the producer is going to make the best decision.
Yes.
And it may be tough on the producer in the short run. But in the long run, if you allow the market to make the adjustments, you're going to have a whole lot better economy and a whole lot better picture moving forward. So, what we look at is that most of the shocks to the market over the last 30 or so years has been on the supply side.
Mm-hmm.
The demand side, of course, sometimes it weakens a little bit, but it hasn't really been a big factor. It's just usually, we may have an oversupply and we've got to wait for demand to catch up.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing the impact on demand. Now, the question I would have, and this is the thing we don't have an answer to, is that there's so much cotton in the world and there's so much demand. And so the question is going to be, over a period of time, the trade flows may change as to where that cotton is going from the U.S.
Yep.
But it's still going to go somewhere.
Yep.
And so China is while this is the kind of the center, the epicenter of the problem, if this continues on, there's going to be adjustments in the market and the trade flows that are going to start helping to balance things out.
Yeah.
It's just that in that short period of time, which may be a year or two.
Change is difficult, Dr. Johnson.
I know, it is. It's difficult. And so we just have to tough it out.
Yeah. Yeah, and it will be interesting to see exactly where we do see more and more U.S. cotton milled and go through the process. So,
well, in cotton, I haven't seen the latest numbers, but I know if you look at the past several years, Turkey's been our number one importer of U.S. cotton.
Yeah.
Vietnam has been rising, and in fact, their imports have increased here recently. Probably, and I can't say for sure, but probably that some of that cotton that's going to Vietnam has ended up in China.
Right.
I mean, they share a border.
Right.
Bangladesh has been a good customer. China has not been our main customer for cotton. They've kind of been the marginal customer. Everybody, when you looked at the cotton market, the prognosticators would always say, well, it depends on what China does. And it's because they were on the margin, and then everybody else was buying their cotton. And if China increased their purchases, it had a big positive impact. If they decreased their purchases, it had a negative impact. So they were the ones that kind of determined what the market was going to be.
Set the world price, basically, when you got right down to
right.
it. Yep. What about other areas of agriculture down here in Texas? Mm. That how they fare in the livestock industry, the cattle industry?
Well, the cattle industry is, they usually... they have their ups and downs, certainly, in terms of profitability. The state went through the drought that we had back in 2011. We probably, in terms of livestock numbers, have recovered fairly well from that. There's parts of the state right now that have had above average rainfall. There's lots of grass. I mean, things are looking good. Of course, corn prices going, they've weakened up, and that helps our fed cattle producers.
Yep.
I mean, it's unfortunate that one sector has to take a little hit while the other sector actually benefits from it. If you look at South Texas, they've got one of the best cotton crops they've had in many years.
Okay.
They're going to produce over 1 million bales down there in South and Central Texas. But the problem is, and from what I've heard, is it's not moving. It's been put into the warehouse, and there's no export right now. Yeah. And so they're looking for storage outside of Corpus and in other places where they can put the cotton.
Gotcha.
And until the export markets open up a little bit, it's just going to sit there.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't do anybody any good, having product just sit. Good grief. We've learned that lesson, and hopefully we've learned that lesson well with the wheat. With the wheat situation in some areas,
right.
too. So, yeah. So, when you take a look at this ag economy, and if you want to stay specific to Texas, that's fine. But when we think about, and, you know, I think maybe you already answered this question. What is it going to take to get us out of this malaise that we're in? And it's some clarity.
Well, I think so. I think the producers... once they get through this crop, then they're going to have to be looking at what are they going to do next year.
Yeah.
Now, if we just look at Texas, one of the things that we going into this this crop year, producers really were looking at their cotton as that was their primary choice in this area because prices at that time for cotton were fairly good. They were up in the mid 70s, even touched a little bit in the lower 80s.
Yeah.
We had a hard time getting the crop in. It's a very mixed bag. There's some really good crops out there, and then there's some that are not, and some that never got established. But now prices are down to the high 50s, low 60s. So whenever we go back into making those decisions for next year, you would like to have some alternative, but I don't know what the alternative we have other than cotton is.
That
seems to be what we have to, that's our base crop.
And that's a challenge that a lot of different areas across the country face every year. Dr. Johnson, thank you so much for making time for me. Appreciate it. All right, that is Dr. Phil Johnson. He is he's currently serving as the head of the Ag Economic Department here at Texas Tech University. When we come back, we're going to have the Road Trip Roundtable. It's going to get started. We've got Tim Lust. We've got Steve Barrett. And Darren Hudson will be right back on AgriTalk.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
It's the world's largest totally irrigated working farm show. Irrigation and so much more. Make your plans to be at Grand Island, Nebraska for the 42nd annual Husker Harvest Days, September 10th through the 12th. Get more information at huskerharvestdays.com. There'll be more than 600 exhibitors at the nation's most modern outdoor farm show site. Husker Harvest Days, September 10th through the 12th at Grand Island, Nebraska. See the show program online now at huskerharvestdays.com.
Hey folks, this is Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Ball with today's Tech Talk. I'm looking at the S&P 500 index today. With U.S. versus China trade war ongoing, traders and investors have been very touchy about talk of a recession in recent months. The big stock market drop suffered late last year, which carried the S&P index down from an October high around 2,940 to a Christmas low at 2,346, exemplified these worries. The market then came back and largely sustained its upward momentum through July, with the S&PX setting a fresh all-time high near 3,028. But recession fears and worries about the worsening of the trade war caused a sharp early August setback. Bears couldn't force the test of the 200-day moving average, however, while most U.S. economic news remained pretty good. The market was still worried, especially at the SPX, proving unable to top its May high around 2950. However, that changed again this week with the index gapping sharply above its 40-day moving average yesterday and sustaining the upward push today. This seemingly signals a short-term retest of the July high. That's all for Tech Talk. We'll be getting back to AgriTalk after these messages.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts and gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk and to Texas Tech University down in Lubbock, Texas. We're down here for the first of six college road shows in 2019. Thank you to Delta Pine and DeKalb for making it possible for us to get out here on the road and talk with some of these people out at the ag universities across the country. We're going to continue on the conversation now that we started with Dr. Phil Johnson. That was kind of a big picture. That was kind of a, here are the broad issues that are impacting the ag economy right now. I want to drill down and get very specific. We're going to do that in a couple of different ways. And I want to start by bringing in who unfortunately has become a grizzled veteran of this trade war, and that is Tim Lust. But he is the CEO of the National Sorghum Producers. Tim, it's good to see you. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be with you today.
Good, good, good. Now, of course, the reason I say you're a grizzled veteran is because sorghum was right there taking some of the early shots of retaliation from China. And really, the anti-dumping thing was kind of a precursor to the big blow-up and what we're dealing with now. What's your confidence level now? Are we going to be able to get this back with China?
I don't think you have to be realistic in terms of we've been through a lot. We're not as quick to make statements as we were 2 years ago, but we still got to be optimistic in agriculture that trade is still viable. We know from our customers in China they really want our product and like our product. So that is what keeps us positive on a daily basis, is knowing that whenever this process is over, that we do have a customer there that has interest, while at the same time certainly knowing and understanding that it's not, one country is not going to solve all of the challenges that there are right now. So making sure that we're working very hard around the world in many different ways to try to make sure that we have other market opportunities.
Other market opportunities. This is so important. Let's bring in Dr. Darren Hudson now to the conversation. Darren, it's good to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me.
Changing trade flows.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reality now. We've got to be out there developing these other markets or we're going to get left behind.
Absolutely. I mean, I think diversification reduces the risk that we have. I mean, you know, we know that soybeans, for example, you know, the part of the reason they took it directly on the chin was because the concentration they had in exports to China. So market diversification is a way to handle that that risk. You know, as Tim sort of alluded to, I think, you know, there are challenges to this.
Yeah.
We don't want to leave our you know, valued customers behind.
Right.
And we hope that when the moment, you know, hopefully this blows over and we'll be able to get back into those markets. But I definitely think, you know, agriculture has to look at ways to diversify those export markets if they can, and, you know, protect themselves from these, you know, sort of policy risks that arise, you know, without warning sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, without warning. As quick as he can put a tweet out, all of a sudden we've got a new issue to deal with sometimes is what it feels like. Steve Barrett is Executive Vice President for Plains Cotton Growers. He joins us right now. Steve, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Chip.
The changing trade flows and going into different markets, China, we just talked about it with Dr. Johnson. China uses about 1 out of 3 bales of cotton that we grow in the world. But there are other market opportunities for us out there that we need to be taking advantage of, aren't there?
There are, and, you know, the products are somewhat fungible, but, you know, in a textile operation, it's a little harder to pick up and move or to change. When a country or a textile mill gets used to using a particular growth of cotton, whether it's a U.S. growth or a Brazilian growth or an Australian growth, it's not like just bringing in another variety and starting to use it. They get used to types of cotton. So we can move around, and we're looking at those different markets and always going to be doing that. But it just doesn't happen overnight, right, is the thing about it. And so, you know, our concern is right now is just a general slowdown in the world economy. And we're exporting nearly 90% of all cotton's going somewhere,
right,
out of the United States. That's concerning us as much as anything. We need this China deal solved. There's
right.
No doubt about it. But we're just trying to caution people that if it gets solved, it may not be exactly everything we want.
Right.
It's not necessary. That doesn't mean cotton's going to go back to 85 cents just because we get a China deal done.
Exactly.
It will help, and we want that to happen. But, you know, we've got a lot of other trade agreements hanging out here that we need to get cleared up as well.
And so, Tim, there's a lot of other market influences out there that we need to be aware of that are going to make it difficult for us to get some of those markets back.
Yeah, I think one of those is just the strength of the U.S. dollar.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an issue into any country and our competitiveness into any country. And so, you know, while that's positives with that, just from a commodity export standpoint, certainly
yep.
there's some real challenges there as well.
Yeah, and Steve mentioned it, but the trade issues, when you've got the two biggest economies in the world, Darren,
mm-hmm.
that are facing off here, it's going to have a ripple effect through the rest of the globe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can't deny the fact that, you know, China, like you said, in cotton, 1 out of 3 bales are consumed in China. And so what happens in China is going to ripple out.
Yeah.
The conflict between the U.S. and China is going to, you know, have the, you know, these huge impacts. But these other macroeconomic factors
yeah.
that Tim's alluding to, I mean, you know, strength of the U.S. dollar is a result of a lot of things. And none of those, you know, are going to be solved by in agriculture. Those are much bigger issues. And so I think, you know, we have to be realistic about what's going to happen, as Steve indicated. You know, but that doesn't mean we don't quit working. I mean,
right.
we've got
That's to right.
you know, got to keep working at these things.
Yeah. And we... And instead of having the markets right now, we're getting some offset payments, I guess, the market facilitation program payments. Tim, the MFP 2.0, did it work better than 1.0? And is it filling enough of that hole that's in farm income out there?
Well, I think given the current realities of agriculture and the challenges from an economic standpoint, it was timely, and it is helping tremendously. Is it anybody's first preference? No.
Right.
But certainly from a sorghum industry standpoint, we worked very close with this administration since day one. And so from that standpoint, it is something that our growers are very appreciative of. While continuing to focus, I mean, on, you know, back on the micro standpoint, I mean,
yeah.
We've got countries like Vietnam and Thailand that we've still got phytosanitary issues of why we can't get into them. So, you know, continuing to push on the market side to make sure that we still have those other opportunities, but being appreciative of the resources that are available today. Is this program perfect? No. There's no perfect way to do this, but I think it is certainly helping.
Yeah. Steve, in a second, I'm going to ask you about how the MFP payments might be affecting decision-making for next year. But Darren, first, without those payments in this mix,
this is
a mess.
It's a total mess. And, I mean, you know, the USDA released its projection of net farm income. And so the general public sees this thing and says, oh, net farm income is supposed to go up.
Right.
But what they don't realize is, you know, most of that's the MFP filling that gap.
Yeah.
There's some cost reductions in there. I don't know that I believe all those, but certainly.
I saw those and I was like, what are they doing?
but that MFP is timely. Like Tim said, it's certainly not a perfect program by any means. And I'll tell you, you know, if we're going to continue down this path, if the administration is going to continue down this path, we better start talking about MFP 3.0 very quick.
Right.
Because we got a lot of lenders who aren't going to be so keen on lending money if there's not something out there that's been announced.
Which is the perfect lead in to the question that I was going to ask you, Steve. Are these MFP payments and the idea, okay, we had 1.0, 2.0 is here. We're going to see the second half of the 2.0 payments. That's going to happen. And there's ideas of 3.0. Is it having an impact on a cotton grower's decision to go ahead and stick with cotton?
Well, I think it's going to have an effect on any producer on any crop, because I don't know any crop that's in the money at this point. And, you know, I want to go back a little bit to the MFP, too, and how's it working. And it's working good because, you know, they've put enough money in it. But as Tim said, there's never a perfect program. You know, last year it was all paid on production. And we had a lot of folks that didn't have a crop, but they bought revenue insurance that they were expecting that revenue to go up based upon where prices were, and that didn't happen. And so, you know, we heard complaints about that. Well, then this year, it's all paid on a per acre basis, and we've got a little bit of squabbling between counties, but I think most of that's explainable. But now we've got people saying, well, I'm going to make 3 bales to the acre, and I'm not getting as much. The dry land guy's getting the same. So, but the point is this, and that's what I don't want to leave unsaid. This administration is standing by farmers, and I've been in this business a long time, and I've never seen an administration stand with farmers as much as this one has. You can like the president, you can like a lot of, or not like, but if they weren't standing with farmers right now, I don't know what this would be looking like.
Tim, I see a look of agreement on your face.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, unfortunately, as you mentioned, we've had to walk from day one through this process, and it hasn't been fun. But we've always known that the administration was there on our side and working hard to take care of our growers and keep us. So, you know, and it's you know, not always, we haven't always done these interviews for the last 20 years and talked about an administration that even knew who farmers were,
right,
much less was helpful. So I think that is a very key point that Steve brought up.
Okay, guys, we're coming to the end of the segment here, but when we come back, let's talk about what the future is for the cotton industry, what the future is for the sorghum industry, and what it's going to take to get there. Okay, Darren? All right, we are live at Texas Tech University having a conversation. It is our roadshow roundtable right here on AgriTalk. We'll be right back in just a moment.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarm.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
It's the world's largest totally irrigated working farm show. Irrigation and so much more. Make your plans to be in Grand Island, Nebraska for the 42nd annual Husker Harvest Days, September 10th through the 12th. Get more information at huskerharvestdays.com. There'll be more than 600 exhibitors at the nation's most modern outdoor farm show site. Husker Harvest Days, September 10th through the 12th at Grand Island, Nebraska.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. At Private Healthcare, we provide the peace of mind you deserve. With Private Healthcare, you'll get the coverage you want and healthcare you need. If your employer doesn't supply healthcare coverage and you don't qualify for Medicare or Medicaid, you need to give us a call right now. Private Healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. When life comes at you unexpectedly, you need to be ready, and health insurance is your financial safety net. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910. 800-626-4910.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
When you're really hungry, sometimes only the leftovers can fill you up. We're serving up a big portion of Tuesday's meatloaf right now on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. We're having a roadshow roundtable. It is a great conversation. Wrapping things up from our first college roadshow of 2019 down here at Texas Tech University. Thank you to Delta Pine and DeKalb for making it possible for us to get out here on the road. We're talking with Dr. Darren Hudson, Texas Tech ag economist. Tim Luss, CEO of the National Sorghum Producers, and Steve Verrett, Executive Vice President for Plains Cotton Growers. We've talked about how we got into the situation that we're in right now. Steve, we started talking a little bit about how the MFP program and those payments are having an impact, not just on cotton mm-hmm. growers, but every crop grower's decision-making for the year ahead. What do we need to see going forward? If I gave you a wish list, and what would you put right at the top of it to help solve these issues that we've got in the, specifically, the cotton economy down here in Texas?
Well, I mentioned earlier, you know, we're so sensitive to demand and worldwide demand and economies around the world and how they're faring. So, you know, a lot of that is out of our control. But I think Darren mentioned a little bit earlier that, you know, if this thing continues on at the clip it's at right now.
Yes.
And we don't see some improvements in futures prices in the next couple of months. We're going to have people going in and starting to get financing. And in this part of the world anyway, they look at the crop insurance price.
Right.
That's what they look at as kind of the cash flow item. And we set that price here in the month of February. And if we're still at these levels of 60 cents or less, it's going to be very difficult for a banker to be able to cash flow that. And I think if you look at all the commodities where they are now, it's going to be the same deal.
And Darren, the financing and making the right decisions on how much, where you get it, how you get it, because it's not like we're tapping into the equity that we've got any longer. I mean, we've burned through that, haven't we?
Well, for the most part, I mean, I think what troubles me stepping back is, you know, I think older farmers probably have some equity.
Yeah.
And they can ride this a little bit better, or they'll exit trying to preserve that equity. What worries me is the younger farmers who have been leveraged up, through these bad times. You know, they're much more sensitive to this. And so, you know, if the bank is going to look at that balance sheet and that cash flow statement, they're going to go, I'm not so worried about it. And so, you know, it's that younger generation of farmers that we need to kind of move in and take over. That are going to, you know, push us into that next decade. And if they're not there, if they're having trouble getting finance because of basically a policy-driven kind of environment, I think, we've got problems.
Makes it really difficult, really difficult. Tim, at the start of 2019 during the growing season, we had a conversation about, hey, this could be one of those years where our sorghum acres just go through the roof because we couldn't get a corn crop in the ground. And then we thought, well, hey, corn price is going to help out the sorghum market. And here we are, we're getting into, we're into chopping season in the Midwest. And neither one of those things has really played out. We didn't see that huge increase in sorghum acres in the corn market. Sure, we could sure use some help there.
You know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, we picked up a few acres late, but so many double crop acres in central Kansas just never got planted. It just rained until it was too late. And so certainly when we look at prices and this discussion about going forward, some biofuel announcements could be very valuable. Not going to be a silver bullet. Obviously, the international trade scene continues to be critical, but I think, as Steve mentioned, I think a little bit of concerns is seeing the economy slowing down a little bit around the world, and knowing that from an agriculture standpoint,
that's a good point, Steve.
That's not always helpful. That's never helpful. And so I think we have to be realistic about where things are at, while at the same time just waking up every day and working very hard for our growers that we all represent to make sure that from a demand standpoint we're doing all we can, and make sure from a policy standpoint if the demand doesn't show up, that's why our trade organizations exist. That's why our checkoff programs exist. And we're going to be very busy working over the next year, no doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt.
And Chip, I'd say, you know, from a cotton perspective.
Yes.
But it's a perfect example of why the Trump administration is, you know, in this mess. Is, you know, if I had a wish list, one of the primary top things on a wish list would be for China not to subsidize polyester production.
Amen.
If they would move away from that, that would have a lot to do with the shift in natural versus man-made fibers, and that changes the dynamics of cotton. But it's not just cotton, it's other crops as well.
Yeah.
And so the Chinese actions and the things that they've been doing over time, have just undermined agriculture in the U.S. for a good bit of time. And as Steve said, this is like the first time an administration has stood up consistently to China, and it's, I mean, it's costly. It's hurting, you know, the U.S. industry, but it's one of those things that I think a lot of people look back and go, I understand what's happening here.
See, and I like the fact that, Tim, you kind of blended the two issues there, because on the trade front, what you said about farmer support for President Trump, Steve, I think is 100% right on the trade front. But it's when we get over the biofuel side of things now, Tim, where it's just, it's become so frustrating dealing with EPA and the Trump administration on this.
And obviously, I think you have a lot more to talk about on this topic over the next week.
I hope so.
We'll continue this conversation at a future point, probably, and it'll be more interesting.
Good. You know, every now and then you just wonder, I wonder what my guest knows that he can't really talk about right now. Yeah, that thought goes through your head. You guys are fantastic. So I'm going to leave. I want to wrap up with you on this, Darren. You mentioned your wish list, but doggone it, I mean, just give us some certainty pointing forward. Give us some clarity of what the policy issues are going to be, and then these guys can come up with a plan to address it and to be successful in business.
Absolutely. You know, we were joking off air a moment ago. The corn market had a pretty big move this morning.
Yeah.
And I told the merchant who was standing next to me, I said, pull up, you know, POTUS's Twitter feed and see what he said. And sure enough, he had made a comment about China and about sort of this prolonged trade war. And boom, the market responds to that. So, you know, policy uncertainty is a problem. It's always been a problem. And so I think that's it. We got to get set the stage for these people to plan.
Very good. Gentlemen, we got to cut it off right there. It was sure fun talking with you guys. We'll talk with you again soon.
Thanks.
All right. That is Steve Barrett, Executive VP, Plains Cotton Growers, Tim Lust, Sorghum Producers, and Darren Hudson from Texas Tech. Hey, we'll be back Monday morning with stories from Auction Road and Greg
Sweet
Peters.
Strawberry icing. You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. That's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
It's the world's largest totally irrigated working farm show. Irrigation and so much more. Make your plans to be at Grand Island, Nebraska for the 42nd annual Husker Harvest Day, September 10th through the 12th. Get more information at huskerharvestdays.com. There'll be more than 600 exhibitors at the nation's most modern outdoor farm show site. Husker Harvest Day, September 10th through the 12th at Grand Island, Nebraska. See the show program online now at huskerharvestdays.com.